Welcome back, Siege fans and Prepper Fiction fans. I'm here again with Brian.
Hi, everybody.
And Jeff.
Hello.
For another look at a pretty common prepper scenario of concern, a pandemic. Now, we all just got through with a pretty serious rehearsal with the COVID-19 experience, but COVID wasn't our first exposure, so to speak, to global doom via a germ. There have been books and movies since the 1820s. Not movies so much. But there's been stories. We've been hearing stories, let's say, for many decades about a runaway germ that ends civilization as we know it. Bio-doom comes in behind comet doom and nuke doom in popularity with audiences. There were a few early books in the genre, but for movies, it really took off in the 1990s. Looking back, do a little research. I kind of wonder if it's because HIV was a big headline thing. It was a big scare in the 1980s. And then the 1990s had scares about mad cow disease. I don't know if you remember that one. Or hantavirus. Or bird flu. We were all supposed to be suffering from bird flu. And 1995 was also the first outbreak of Ebola, where some 300 people died. It had like an 81% mortality rate, so it was pretty serious. So perhaps it's not too surprising that the mid-90s saw a whole bunch of bio-doom movies come out. Bio-doom movies seem to be unevenly split into more realistic pandemic stories, and then a lot of them are zombie stories. Lots and lots of zombie stories. We'll save the zombies for a future episode. Maybe we can do a zombie-doom someday. For today, I figured we'd focus on the more real-world settings and see if there's anything useful for us as preppers. Now, while I was doing my research, I found out that what might be the first post-apocalyptic novel about a pandemic was The Last Man by Mary Shelley. She's the one who wrote Frankenstein, you'll remember. Her pandemic story wasn't really well received by the critics of the day, so it remained pretty obscure until recently. But it also went on to become the inspiration for a whole boatload of 20th century books and films, like Richard Matheson's novel I Am Legend in 1954, which itself spawned at least three remake movies, but those all drifted into the zombie territory. While her novel wasn't a zombie story, I think we could probably save hers for the Zombie Doom episode. What might have been the first pandemic story that people would have heard of was from our old friend Edgar Allan Poe. His Mask of the Red Death short story, which was about a bunch of wealthy people who decided to hide themselves in a castle, lock the doors. I think they even welded them shut so that nobody could get in and out to save themselves from the Red Death, which was a plague that was ravaging the countryside. So there was a bunch of rich people in there partying, lavishing, and having a good time waiting for the rest of the world just to die. That seemed kind of like a parallel a little bit I could see in the COVID panic where the more wealthy or the upper classes could afford to stay home or work remote, if they worked at all, and keep themselves safe from that killer COVID, whereas the working classes, like waitresses and truck drivers and laborers, they had to just either face the infection or be out of work. Comet doom was a more popular topic, but there was a plague novel in the 1940s, which I have never read, but it's got the catchy title of The Plague. Since I had never gotten to that one, I heard that, Brian, you read that one. Could you tell me what that one was about?
Sure. Like you said, it was titled The Plague. It was by Albert Camus in 1947. It was a story based in northern Africa. It was a French city off the coast of Algeria named Oran. The plague was a form of bubonic plague. And the story was actually based off the cholera epidemic that had hit Oran in real life 100 years prior to that. It was just pretty much a story of human nature and condition. And it seemed from the storyline anyway, they were able to contain that within that region without it spreading worldwide.
So was it a lockdown story?
It was. Eventually, you couldn't come or go. You had to stay within the gate. They had everything shut down. So the train stopped, travel stopped. You pretty much were isolating within the perimeter of that city.
So were people freaking out about being locked down or getting desperate or going crazy?
The range of people's reactions is as diverse as the population. So you had people that were resigned to the fate from the plague, and then you had others maybe in denial. And it was really a story of human nature and the variety of actions and reactions that you get from a population like that.
Were there any sort of obvious heroes and villains?
There were, but I can't pronounce their names. This is a book written in French and translated to English. But the story was given as the narrator by a doctor.
Did you see any COVID parallels? Because I'd also read that that book became suddenly popular during COVID.
Yeah, when everybody was locked down, didn't have anything to do. And it seemed like a nice, satisfying thing to read, I guess. But not a lot. I mean, no mask wearing was mentioned that I can recall. There was a little bit of isolation. You know, it was about halfway through the book before you heard about quarantines and setting up wards. And then they did do a lot of I think all the public spaces were turned into a hospital area with beds and bunks and all that stuff. So, you know, taken care of. And there was a lot of mass dying off and mass graves and that type of thing. There was a little bit of violence and crime, but not to the level what we may have experienced, depending on where you live. For COVID-19.
Well, if we skipped ahead some, there was a movie that I always liked to watch when it was in reruns, 1976, The Cassandra Crossing. I hadn't really thought about it as a bio-doom movie since it involved a train plummeting off of a broken bridge, but that's really what it was a virus movie. Just to give a sort of quick synopsis of the plot, some eco-terrorists break into a secret lab. They break a secret vial of some, what you find out later is a bioweapon that the army is working on. One of the terrorists escapes, but he's infected. He hides on a train that's bound from Geneva to Stockholm. Eventually, the army finds out that he's on that train, and people on the train are starting to get sick too. So the government/army's response is to put the train onto a siding and then weld all the windows shut so that nobody can get off. Then they're going to reroute it and send it to a derelict bridge that won't support the weight of the train at a place called the Cassandra Crossing, with the intention that the train is all going to plummet down into a gorge and blow up, and it'll make the problem go away. It was kind of interesting at the end, the Army Colonel character says, as he's sort of justifying the fact that he thinks he sent everyone to their death, was that he said he was just doing his job. His job was to contain the disease. And by that, he meant not just the bacteria, but the very idea of it. So he was trying to wipe out any besmirching of the government or the army for having dabbled in bioweapons and it got out. So he was just trying to erase the evidence. That sounded a little bit like China's response in COVID-19. I can't remember where it was. Weren't they welding the doors shut in some apartment buildings to try and keep people in? And I thought, well, yeah, that's kind of a parallel. That movie kind of had the archetypes of the sneaky, shifty government army lab experimenting with virus bioweapons. And I thought, well, that was interestingly foreshadowing for COVID. Like I say, it wasn't intended to be a disease movie. Well, the 70s were kind of a good time for government is shifty and sneaky movies, since this was a few years after Watergate and everybody could believe that the army and the government were up to no good. But then we kind of skip ahead. Like I'd mentioned, it wasn't until the early 90s that you had a bunch of real virus scares like the bird flu. But then there was a movie in 1995 called The Outbreak. I didn't get a chance to watch that one. I'm cheap and I was trying to find a free version and I couldn't find it. But that one was 1995. Did either of you guys get to watch that one?
Yeah, Mick, I have seen that one several times.
You give us a quick synopsis of it because I haven't seen it. Go ahead for spoilers. I'm not worried about it.
Okay, so the story is about an outbreak of an unknown virus with Dustin Hoffman, who kind of runs the team of bringing in the government resources to start shutting everything down and the leading the government response to how they're going to handle this and yet still treat the virus.
So did it start in a government lab? Where did the virus come from?
I want to say they begin with looking for patient zero, as a lot of these flicks tend to do.
So what was the government's response? I think it takes place in a California town is where the outbreak.
Yeah, if I'm remembering right, it was a small town that was easier to lock it down and control the ins and outs of society. And they bring everybody to the town square for testing and who they're going to lead to the train going out of town.
So wasn't there a plot to bomb or blow up the town or do something to make it all go away, which was kind of the government response is, well, we can't really stop it, so let's just blow it up.
Yes, that seems to be pretty predominant in a lot of these movies where the final answer always seems to be throw the baby out with the bathwater. Burn it all in some kind of incendiary bomb that just evaporates all the oxygen and everything within sight. So all the evidence is gone.
I think I'd read that they called it off.
Was it Dustin Hoffman that basically said, no, you can't bomb a whole town or something? Or was it the bomber pilot said, I can't do this. And so he drops it on the water or something instead.
Yes. Yes. The pilot overrode the orders.
Ah, so the town survived. And I don't know, did everybody get over the germ? Was it a happy ending?
I believe it is one of those where they find the cure in the 11th hour.
Ah, because in that sense, it sounds kind of like the Cassandra crossing, but set in a town rather than a train. Because on the train, they discover that it's oxygen that kills the virus. So basically, if they had stopped being cooped up behind their welded shut windows and exposed to oxygen, the virus would have died out anyway. So there are survivors in the Cassandra crossing. The army colonel fails in his mission of wiping out all witnesses. But it was a happy ending that people survived and the germ went away because of oxygen. So I wondered if Outbreak had that same sort of happy Hollywood ending where it gets resolved.
Yep.
So then I think we have to skip ahead. I don't know, Jeff, did you have any movies between 1995 and 2011? That's the next one that I had watched, but that doesn't mean that's all there was.
Well, there's a bunch of them. It was a busy time for Hollywood, but none that really stick out for what we're trying to come across. A lot of them were smaller titles, smaller release, not the Hollywood blockbusters.
And there were a lot of zombie movies.
Yes, and that's what we're trying to avoid on this episode. So
yeah, no, we have to save the zombies for another day. Keep our zombies fresh. So that next movie that I was referring to was 2011, the movie Contagion, starring Matt Damon and Gwyneth Paltrow, even though she dies in like the first 10 minutes, but she shows up in cameos, so she was still in there. I think, Brian, you said you just watched that one?
I did. It was a good movie. I believe I've seen it in the past before.
So why don't you give us a quick synopsis of the Contagion movie?
The Contagion had like Lawrence Fishburne and Matt Damon. It had a lot of similarities to what we experienced during COVID-19. We had a vaccine in the movie that actually worked. So that was a difference. They had a little bit more extreme violence and panic than we've seen during the height of our COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, there was that one scene where people were lined up in a drugstore, I think it was. They were in line to get a drug, which I don't even think was the vaccine. I think it was that blogger's fake drug, Forsythia. Some lady was counting them off, and she said, no, we only have 50 doses, and the rest of you just have to go home. And instead, they become a mad riot, throwing chairs through the window and everything else. And I thought, yeah, you know, I didn't see anything like that with COVID. But I guess it's Hollywood. They couldn't just have everybody go, oh, bummer, and go home.
So that was one of the examples of the extreme. Others were the level of destruction. And so when Matt Damon was walking along the street, you see piles and piles of trash and just a handful of souls just digging through the trash. And everything looked completely devastated. The level of destruction was a little bit dramatized, I think, because of Hollywood's ability to do that to keep us captivated. But it had a lot of similarities, but everything was increased as far as dramatic effect.
I kind of wonder if images of that movie violence and destruction was in the backs of people's minds when the government told everyone in 2020 that they needed to lock down and stay home or grandma would die. I think in that one, the rapidly developed government vaccine was actually effective, and that kind of stopped the contagion. So it was like happily ever after, because the government did come up with an effective vaccine.
Yeah, the vaccine was actually effective, and they used a lottery system to distribute it because they couldn't manufacture enough for everyone. At the end of the movie, they show that it originated in China via bat and then animal to human transmission. And that's how Gwyneth Paltrow was one of the first people to be infected with this virus and then brought it back to the United States, and it spread from there. And it spread very quickly. And we see that in modern times. As opposed to the 1947 novel on plague, everything was contained within that one little region because they didn't travel like we do. But with mass transport and how quickly we move around and everything gets worldwide pretty quick. So that was very similar to COVID-19 as well.
What about you, Jeff? Did you watch that one?
I've seen that one many times, and that one was really good. They did a montage in the movie where they had put the pieces together and connected all the dots to how it transformed across borders and continents. And so that one was really good, which kind of drew a lot of parallels to the last few years.
One of the interesting takeaways I had from that movie was that the CDC was being portrayed as this heroic, humanity-saving government agency that, you know, all full of altruism, that they were going to sacrifice themselves for the betterment of the country. And so I thought, well, COVID sort of showed us a different side of that. Back in 2011, the CDC still had a warm and fuzzy glow to their reputation. So they were still the heroes of the story, which I thought, well, COVID kind of destroyed that. But back then, they were being portrayed as the heroes.
And they had showed some of the behind the scenes type of events where the CDC would do the tracking, right? So they were showing, actually watching surveillance videos from the casino and the restaurants and airports and that type of thing. And then they have a chart where they were following where this epidemic has spread to and then reverse engineering that to see where it had came from. They were doing a little bit of tracing of people.
Oh, yeah. Contact tracing. That was pretty big in the first couple of months of COVID, but then after that, they just kind of dropped it.
Yeah.
But without the technology that we have today with the cell phone tracking and invasion of our privacy, but that's a political thing, so I won't bring that up. They didn't have that benefit that we know of in 2011, I believe that movie was. So today, they're probably a little bit better at it. So I thought it was interesting how they could go back and look at the videos and see that's when this person touched this person and that's when they got it, and then follow that person into the next chain. So they were able to actually watch the growth of this thing by going back and watching video and security cameras.
So the surveillance state is actually for our own good, huh?
Yeah, I guess a better word would be security rather than surveillance. I mean, it wasn't the government at the time tracking like they probably do today, but it was, you know, them going back and accessing security footage.
I think I remember that there wasn't a lot of mask wearing, as I seem to remember people are walking all around, even though it was supposed to be transmitted. No, I think they were trying to say it was transmitted all by touch, not by air. They were all worried about what people had touched.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that too, where they were talking about the touch, but there was some mask wearing. The biological suits that they used within the CDC, those looked pretty cool. But Matt Damon's character was immune, apparently, to the virus. So he was a little bit obsessive with his remaining daughter that were still alive at the time. So he had her masked up pretty good.
So you touched on something there, Brian, how it's transferred. And in a lot of these movies, especially, the Hollywoods really like for the dramatic effects. The main character looks into the camera and says, "It's airborne." That's one of the ones that is supposed to put the fear in all of us.
Well, that was the big scare with COVID, I guess, as they were predicting that it was primarily air transfer. So that's why we had to be afraid from each other and wear masks. But I also remember what was the black doctor's name? the actor's name, Brian? You said his name. Fishburne? That I noticed at one point in Contagion, he used the term having to implement social distancing, which I thought I'd never heard of that until deep into COVID. So I guess the idea had been floating around for a while.
During the movie, they were a little quicker to come up with the requirements, right? So during the COVID, we didn't know if it was airborne or spread by contact or left on the surfaces of anything, or if it was some people said it was what was from you when you speak.
Oh,
So
aerosolized.
yes, we kind of got a little bit of a reality check when we realized nobody really knows what's going on. I don't even know if they still know. It was powers to be making regulations based on absolutely no facts whatsoever, just guesses, wild guesses. So the movie did a little bit better as far as making that look a little bit more scientific.
Well, it seemed like the characters, the extras on set were written as trusting what the CDC said. So they were all waiting in line obediently. And there were those other scenes where the army was handing out food and supplies. No, that's right. There was a riot scene where there weren't enough MREs for everybody and they started a rush on an empty truck. So they're fighting over an MRE. And again, I didn't see that, although I don't know. Maybe there were fights over toilet paper and I just missed them with the COVID time. Did either of you guys fight over toilet paper?
No, but I do remember hearing stories of it, yes.
So maybe that's a good segue to the actual pandemic that we all got to experience, not in a Hollywood sense. So, Brian, how about we start with you? Because you're a truck driver, so you couldn't very well work from home.
I considered an essential driver or essential worker, so that made me feel special.
So, what was dealing with COVID like for you as an essential worker who couldn't stay home and bunker down?
It was frustrating because of the differences in the places that I go. So I'm a local truck driver and we deal with a variety of places and deliver a variety of things. Kind of just think UPS with a tractor trailer, right? It's very diverse. And so are the people that we deliver to. So some of the places would have mask requirements only for the driver that was delivering. So you had to mask up and keep your distance, but everybody around you didn't have to wear a mask. And there was a lot of that going on. So I was very frustrated with that type of thing. But before that happened, I actually did stay home. It was actually an exciting time for me. I hate to, I know people were hurt by that tragedy, but I was excited that I got to lock everybody in the house for an entire month. I didn't leave my house for a month. We didn't shop for a month. I didn't make money for a month. It was a nice test of our preps. It's kind of like a prepper's dream come true, if you think about it. It put a dent in our prepper pantry, but we got through it with very little trouble. We actually ate better while we were isolated in the house. Quarantined is what the note on my door said. You weren't allowed to come in the house. And if you left the house, you couldn't come back. That only lasted about a week. We didn't shop. We didn't leave the house for an entire month. I didn't go to work. Never got behind on our bills, kept everything going. We ate great. Got to test out a lot of stuff, a lot of playing around, a lot of blogging and that kind of stuff. So it really wasn't necessary, especially once we realized after just a few days or maybe a week that this is very unnecessary.
But you did it anyway.
I had the permission to stay home. So, it's like giving a free month vacation, but all of a sudden you're supposed to, like, oh, I'm coming back to work. No, nope, not me. I'm staying home.
So you got to test out your preps. What about you, Jeff? How did COVID affect you?
Well, in the manufacturing sector, I was listed as essential, which we later coined the term expendable because part of the company was allowed to work from home, but obviously you can't make things from home using machinery. And so I went to work every day. Apparently there was this thing called face masks and face shields that got very popular, and we just happened to make those. So it was an interesting time. We were supposed to carry a piece of paper that allowed us to be out in public, that we were an essential worker, which I thought was a joke, and I never carried mine. Yeah, I mean, I survived it. I never once had to argue over a roll of toilet paper. I was more than prepared for that. I did see a lot of people struggle with just some very basic needs. And like Brian was saying, the decisions that were made by our fearless leaders, that either were misguided, control freakishly, or they just flat out made up the science.
We're finding that out now with Fauci on the stand, discovering that, we didn't know. We just kind of threw a dart and made that up. And I thought, well, no, that's not how you portrayed it back in 2020. It was, I am the science.
Correct. And all the policies that we're also finding out that were completely unconstitutional, and how much of our societal fabric was just blatantly destroyed.
Yeah, I think a lot of mom and pop businesses went out of business because they couldn't do all of the jumping through the hoops that they were supposed to jump through. So only the big ones like Amazon and Walmart could jump through the hoops, so they survived. So that was a little bit of a unequal attrition going on.
For me, the COVID lockdown turned out to be quite a blessing, actually. For one thing, it meant I didn't have to do that 1 and 2 hour commute every day. What I did professionally could just as well have been done from home.
The older owner of the company was very much a brick and mortar guy, and so everybody had to be at their desk by 9 o'clock and doing their stuff. When COVID hit and there was this sort of 2 weeks to flatten the curve, the owner said, all right, I guess we'll all just go home and work from home. Well, working from home turned out to work so well that the company decided, you know, we don't need to be paying this rent on a downtown Boston office space. So I got to stay home and work from home, and it eventually just sort of stayed at home. My experience was that COVID actually did me a favor. Like say, Brian, it was sort of very sad for a lot of other people, but it was kind of a good catalyst for me. And we didn't run out of toilet paper, but when we would go shopping, I was just kind of on recon, really just seeing how empty the shelves were. It was interesting how much staples would be gone. Bread was gone, but then flour started to be really rare. And then yeast was really rare as you were trying to make your own bread. All kinds of liquid drinks, bottled water, whatever. Those were the big empty shelves. So it was interesting how much the retail food market wasn't really ready for the sudden rush of everybody saying, if I'm going to be stuck at home, I need to stock up on supplies. It did help to be a prepper and have supplies at home so that I wasn't desperate. So what, after you guys have gone through COVID, what sort of lessons did you come away with?
Question the information from the get-go. I think I'm going to assume that I speak for a lot of people that they've lost complete trust in some certain agencies that try to run our lives.
I ditto that. From the government to the media to social media, everybody in between. Can't trust them. They've developed a really poor reputation and they've deserved every bit of it. In fact, I'm surprised it's not worse than it really is.
So do you think going into the next one, and it's not hard to imagine that there's going to be a next one, they're going to have to ramp it up, though, because they hyped up COVID as sort of the super toxic grandma killer. And while some people did die from it, it just wasn't anywhere near as bad as they said, which undercut their sense of urgency. At least in the movie, people died within 7 days, so it was pretty obvious. COVID didn't quite pan out to be the monster that they had said. Going forward, what do you think you do with that? Now that you've learned you can't trust them.
We can't trust them, but they still have control. They can still cause the supply chain issues. I think COVID taught them which people they really need to run society as far as industry, because the government doesn't make anything. They don't produce anything. So I think you have to be a little more self-sustainable, or at least in that mindset where you're not going to be dependent. You know, you still had the Walmarts, you still had the Amazons, even though there was horror stories about Walmart that wouldn't sell certain products, which made no sense. It's just they still have all the control, but I think any response from society or the public is going to be much different the next time.
So if you were going to guess, how would you guess the public is going to react when we get the Chicken Little, oh my God, the virus is here? How do you think people are going to react differently?
Not very well. I don't think you'll see the social distancing or the mask. They've lost trust in the people, and it's going to take one heck of a whopper to get us back in line.
What about you, Brian?
Well, I'm going to disagree with Jeff just a little bit. I think the number of useful idiots that are going to buy into every single little thing is going to be less than what we saw during COVID, but there are certainly going to be a lot of people that are willing to bend over and take whatever is pushed their way. I also agree that being more self-reliant is what Jeff was saying there with the preps is just as important today as it was ever, right? So for as long as we've had pandemics and epidemics and every story that I've been able to read and watch. Your preps, your food, your supplies, your funds, and your ability to sustain yourself has always been an important role in that. Whether it's supply chain disruptions or stores shutting down, restrictions on where and what you can buy, just being able to help your family and yourself continue to live without relying on others is part of what we do. So that's the good news about it. Preppers are just like we were discussing with the nuclear war. The good news is prepping still makes you a little bit more stronger, a little bit more well suited for what might come your way.
Well, that's kind of a good segue into what would you advise people to do if they wanted to be better set up for the next time we get a disease X scare and the government with lots of power, but maybe no credibility, still wants to lock things down and Gretchen won't let you buy seeds still or whatever. What would you tell people? How are they going to get ready for that?
Pretty much everything we've been doing, but maybe ramp it up a little bit. We got to think back about what was done to us during those times. We couldn't wash our car. I mean, it was no tragedy, but I mean, it certainly was for those business owners. You couldn't go to the gym. You couldn't go into the sections of the store for gardening or anything like that. There was a lot of control going on in a lot of games. And then, of course, they were very limited on what would be on the shelves on top of what you were allowed to buy. So I would recommend you go back and look at the things that we mentioned, the toilet paper, of course. I was very good at that. We all three have a mutual friend, our prepping buddy Todd, that had taught us years ago to stock up on the toilet paper. So I'm sure we were all good on that part. Things like the PPE, your gloves, your masks, your hand sanitizer, all that's going to go quick. I think the further we can advance our preps on something like that is probably very important. Whether it's disease X or the next SHTF event, whatever that might be, as well as funds. You may not be able to access your money in your bank. So maybe you want to have a little bit of cash or a way to make purchases within your house without relying on banks and safe deposit boxes.
So what about you, Jeff? Any advice for how people can handle the next disease X?
Absolutely. So to tie all this together in one big ugly bow is why we do this, because it gives us that time. Is it another COVID scare or is it the disease X that's real? Brian was able to lock himself in his house for a month and not have to deal with the outside world. Your preps buy us that time to maybe get a little more factual information out instead of the 24-hour news cycle that's running the desk counter up in the corner. It allows you to not have to panic. It buys us time while everybody else out there is going crazy. You definitely need to have a good level of prep.
Well, I could see where Brian, with his at least a month's worth of everything in the house, gave him the luxury, you might say, of being able to lock down himself. If we had a real disease that wasn't sort of overhyped like COVID, but was a serious infection risk, being able to lock yourself down would be a safety mechanism. Another thing that occurred to me is that if you're trying to lock yourself down, you might need to figure out some sort of quarantine space within your house. So if you did end up with a family member that came from St. Louis or something and they want to come live with you, you might have to put them somewhere that you can let them stay there and be separated from everybody else until you find out if they're sick or not. It's the sort of thing that you'd want to think about and plan ahead for if you were going to try and have some sort of quarantine space. Now, you could make it the family four-person tent out in the yard if it's not wintertime. They could go stay out there until they've proven that they're not sick. What you do in the wintertime, I don't know, maybe that's what garages are for. It seemed like that would be something that you might want to think about, is where would you quarantine off a space if you were going to hunker down like Brian did?
Another thing to consider is if it really was a really bad pandemic, like what just talking about with the disease X, where they've created, or did I say created, pandemic that's going to be really bad, like Ebola or something that actually can spread fast enough to where it becomes worldwide. I think that burns off pretty quickly, but something to that effect. Look at the shortages we have right now with workers. And this is post-pandemic, right? So if non-preppers think that, well, if I can't go to the store, I'll just call Uber, whoever's doing these home deliveries. You know, I'll just order my groceries online or whatever. That may not be an option at that point. Stores might not even be open. Restaurants may close up. If you can't find workers, you can't have a business or run those type of businesses.
Now, that was kind of Jeff's point, to try to gear yourself up to be self-sufficient rather than counting on Uber Eats to bring you your food, have the food already in the house. But I realize that's also work, which is probably why a lot of people don't do it. It's a lot easier to have somebody else cook your food and bring it to you. So, any last thoughts on bio doom and how to be ready for it?
Yeah, go watch Contagion and learn from it. Try not to go down a rabbit hole, but our preps, we're going to keep doing these little episodes, but we're going to use the same preps for whatever kind of scenario we come up with.
Yeah, funny how we have to eat no matter what. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, the same thing. It's amazing how fun doom can be, right? So, but prepping can be fun too. So it's just like Jeff said, don't go down the rabbit hole of despair or whatever, but it's one of the many different things that can kill us. So we have something, you know, that's the good side of it. There's a lot of things that can kill us.
Something
We
to
want to
look
prepare
forward
for
to.
all. Yeah, a lot to look forward to. But all kidding aside, it is a relief to be prepared for these things rather than something to hide from.
Okay, well, that will probably do it for this episode. So we'll have to do another one. I'm not sure what it'll be yet, but I thank you guys for your time and your input.
Thanks,
Thanks,
Nick.
Appreciate it.
All right, talk to you later. Well, it looks like we got a little chatty again. But of the various dooms we've looked at thus far, biodoom is the more likely of the three. As both Brian and Jeff have pointed out, the ability to isolate yourself at home, maybe for a month, like Brian did, is a good option to give yourself. What COVID taught us, and that the movies didn't, was that government can be as big a problem as the disease itself. From federal overreaction and overreach to local officials seizing the opportunity for some personal power, we will probably have to deal with people-created issues as much as any germs. Could you lock yourself in your house for a month and be okay? Look over what you've got in the house right now. Whatever you're shortest on is your weakest link. 2 months of food doesn't help if you'll have only a week's worth of your important prescription medication, for instance. That would force you out of your house. Or 6 months of meds is great, but if you have only 3 days' worth of water, then what do? Shore up those weak points. If you can stay home for a month, there's a whole lot of doom scenarios that you're far better prepared to handle. Next up should be Chapter 6 of Book 6. I'll talk to you then, and thanks for listening.